This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we'll visit with Paul Arrigo of Visit Baton Rouge. Peter Sagal of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is coming to town on Thursday, and he's issued a challenge to the citizens of the capital city to outdo New Orleans in the response and welcoming to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. We'll talk with Paul Arrigo about what he's going to do about it. Also on the show, Noel Hammett, former East Baton Rouge Parish School Board member, who has a significant announcement, he says, about politics and his own politics. And we'll talk with him about education in Louisiana. And the story today that is front page news is about Common Core. We'll have Michael Brickman, National Policy Director at the Fordham Institute, to discuss Common Core as well. But now the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, it's 877-217-5757. You may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. Today, we learned this morning that Paul Dietzel, the fabled LSU football coach, the last man to lead LSU to an undefeated season, national title, 1958, died this morning in Baton Rouge, appropriately. He was 89 years old. Paul Dietzel was a legend when he left to go to West Point in 1962. He was only 37 years old when he left. He came back, had a tough time as athletic director, and was fired and sent away, but returned to Baton Rouge 15 years ago, and he dies in the city that made him famous. His last 4 years at LSU, Tigers had their only Heisman Trophy winner in Billy Cannon, and won 36 games while losing 7. I mentioned that Les Miles over the last 4 years is 36. I think he's 38-6, so he's actually got a little better percentage record. But Dietzel was king of the hill in 1958 and continued that until he left a few years later, and will be remembered as one of the great coaches LSU has ever had and the man who brought Tiger football into the modern age. Paul Dietzel dead at 89, and of course we'll talk about this in the days to come. We're joined now by Paul Arrigo. He's president of Visit Baton Rouge, and the executive vice president, Renee Orang, has joined us as well, and they're here to talk about something that is important to our community. Coming this Thursday, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is arriving with Peter Sagal and crew. And Peter, on this show last week, issued a challenge to the citizenry of Baton Rouge to outdo New Orleans. He says New Orleans is the best audience he's ever had. Here's how he sounded a few days ago.
There is no better city to eat and drink in than New Orleans, Louisiana, USA. So we had a great time there. But I don't want to disparage anybody else, and I don't want to, Baton Rouge, your chance is coming. If you think that you can do better in terms of an enthusiastic response, in terms of some po' boys, we are absolutely willing to give you that chance.
All right. Paul Arrigo. You look like you're chomping at the bit.
Well, it is quite a challenge, you know, and being from New Orleans, I understand the egocentric attitude that that city has at times. But I can tell you, Jim, that we were just voted Louisiana's most friendly city, and I think it's a pretty nifty challenge. I think we can pack the stands there, and I'm going to let Renee talk about that. But even more so, I think that that when Wait Wait leaves Baton Rouge, they're going to realize what a great city we've got here in the capital area.
Well, one way to show that is to show up in large numbers. And Renee worked, I know, fervently with David Gordon, the president, general manager of WRKF, to make this event possible. And here we are. We're ready to go, and we've got some seats available. And I know Baton Rouge doesn't like to be outdone by New Orleans.
Ever. Isn't that the truth? And not only friendliest city, Baton Rouge was also voted one of the best foodie cities in the South by Convention South magazine. So I think we definitely have our troops out there to rally to put Baton Rouge at least at the top of Peter's list. We don't have to necessarily beat any other city, but definitely to let him experience and his crew experience Baton Rouge at its best.
Well, Paul, you grew up in New Orleans, and you've chosen to live in Baton Rouge. There must be some charm to your adopted hometown.
Oh, listen, I think Renee was very diplomatic when she said, we don't want to beat anybody. We just want to be, you know, recognized. But I do think that this is a great city. This is a city with an awful lot of diversity, with economically and culturally, socially. And I think bringing a national radio show to Baton Rouge, Louisiana is very significant. I think this gives us an opportunity to expand the brand Baton Rouge to a really, really high culture office audience. I'm really excited about bringing Wait to Baton Rouge, and I'm awfully glad that Renee was very persistent in in having it come here. She came to me and said, "We want to bring it to Baton Rouge," and I said, "Okay, make it happen." And she did, and she's done a great job with that.
Well, speaking of high culture, James Carville will be on stage. I can't get more culture than Corporal Carville, right?
Well, I think, you know, Baton Rouge is the political capital of the South. This is the perfect venue, perfect location for Wait, Don't Tell Me. I think the material to be had in Louisiana is beyond what they can get in any other destination, for sure.
Well, a few weeks ago, we had Edwin Edwards and Larry King at the LSU Union, and LSU's gotten a lot of grief for that, but I give them credit for trying. And for those who went, as I did, it was a nice event, but it was only half full. And that's, of course, been a source of embarrassment since the event, and it lost money. We don't want to see the River Center half full Thursday night, do we?
Well, I don't think that's going to happen, but I think even more important is the number of times Baton Rouge, the brand Baton Rouge, will be broadcast throughout NPR, and the fact that they're gearing up to come to Baton Rouge. This is a great radio audience that we're going to have. So this is going to be a home run.
Renee, you must have been a fan of the show.
I'm a huge fan, like uber goober fan, terrible fan, love it all. listen to it every week.
What kind of fan is that?
Uber goober. My 13-year-old even listens to it with us. So put it that, you know, it's on in the car every time we're driving around on Saturdays and Sundays. Mm-hmm. I want to say that our challenge is ticket sales have been strong, been very good. If you haven't gotten your tickets, you've got 3 days left. Go out and do that. But when you're there, we want you to rally your spirit and really welcome Peter Sagal, Carl Castle, Tom Baudette, Kiri O'Connell, and Brian Bordelon to Baton Rouge. Thank them for being here. And just keep the spirit high. That's what we're looking for.
Well, when Bill Maher came in January, there were protesters outside the arena, same arena. I hope that we can avoid that with Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Well, if we have protesters, I hope they come in from out of town and they stay in hotel rooms and spend a little money in our community, because it's good for the economy.
I don't think these particular protesters for Mr. Maher did that, but nonetheless, it added a flair to the event, and Bill Maher is one of those people who stirs the pot. Wait, Don't Tell Me is a different kind of show, and it's one that I think people of all stripes, no matter what your political persuasion, your religious affiliation, you can enjoy Wait, Don't Tell Me.
And if you don't, Jim, you can just turn it off, right?
But we hope nobody does that. Right. It's a very popular show around the country, and particularly on WRKF. And they didn't come here because it was unpopular. They came here because people are going to greet Peter Sagal and crew with glee and more than a smattering of applause. I'm sure it'll be an uproarious greeting when Sagal and company arrive on the River Center stage.
So, and I'm sure it will be.
By the way, is it a prerequisite to have your last name start with an A to be at the high levels of Visit Baton Rouge?
Well, it helps, you know, and she's one above me because she's got the E and I've got the R, so it's, you know, she's alphabetically.
Yeah, we're all about alphabetical. Yeah, that's right. We're alphabetical. One, right?
We've got Arrigo and Arang, and they're doing great work. What's your objective for 2013 as we approach the final stretch of this year?
You're right. You know, we're finishing up, going into the fourth quarter, huh? And I think if there's one thing I'm really proud of what we've put together the last couple of years, Jim, is really branding Baton Rouge as a culinary destination. Our board charged staff to get the word out that Baton Rouge is a culinary destination. We've been overshadowed in the past by Lafayette and New Orleans, and I think that the word has gotten out and that we've had success, and the truth is food here is pretty good, and now we've got the beer trail. That's and great. We've got some other things going on, right?
Well, Sagal wanted a restaurant recommendation when he was on the show, and he said he was staying downtown, so I was thinking downtown, and I don't circulate in that area for dining as much as other parts of the city, but do you have any recommendations for Mr. Sagal and others?
I'm going to rattle off three or four real quick ones. Capital City Grill, Strubies, IPO, Little Village, and I'll let Renee take the rest.
All right.
And Tsunami. The Blend is a great bar snack.
What if you go outside of downtown? Where do you go?
Well, some of the local traditional places, of course, Jubin's, Mansour's, Ruffino's, cannot make a bad choice at any of those. And then Paran's and Sammy's that are kind of our local places as well.
How about Louis?
Louis, of course. Of course, Louis. That's 24 hours. Yes,
only
24
what?
Hours a
only
day.
After 10 p.m.
Right.
It's open 24 hours a day.
Right.
And has been since 1941, the longest serving restaurant in Baton Rouge. Louis Cafe.
There's some great hidden gems. Absolutely.
Yeah, well, we have a city, I think, that rivals the great city of New Orleans.
Absolutely.
Well, I think the food that we've got here is as good as you're going to get anywhere else, and we've just got to realize it as Baton Rougeans that we've got some great food, and we've got to do a job of promoting it outside of Baton Rouge. Absolutely.
Speaking of LSU football, on a weekend when the Tigers are in town, what does that do for the economy and for the tourism business in this community?
Well, you know, it is without doubt the largest event that we have coming here on a regular basis every fall. Not, you know, we've got Country Fest in the spring. But think about a city that has six or seven major events, major festivals every fall, where you've got the hotels filled, the restaurants do well, and even more so, all these games are nationally televised. The brand, the Baton Rouge, is just expanded throughout the whole country on ESPN, CBS, or whatever station that LSU is playing. It is without doubt the largest single event that we could expect.
You remember Paul Dietzel, don't you?
I do. I was about 6 years old, 7 years old when he won a national championship. Absolutely.
I thought you were young enough that you were named after him.
No, I was not. No, my brother picked my name. He read a book that day, and it was a dog named Paul, and he was 4 years older than me, and he
really?
Decided that my name should be Paul.
Well, I was born the year that LSU won the national championship, 1958, and no Tiger team has gone undefeated since then. Maybe this team will do it in honor of the great Paul Dietzel.
And you were named, I'm sure, after Jim Taylor.
Not really, but I wouldn't have minded if I had been. Jimmy Taylor, by the way, do you know he was on the 57 team?
He correct.
Right before the national championship correct. Team. Dietzel in 57 was headed for his third straight losing season. LSU was 4-5 going into the Tulane game. And Dietzel had told people privately that he was going to resign if LSU lost and he had a third straight losing season. They went out and beat Tulane 25-6, and Taylor scored all 25 points.
I knew he was a kicker too, right.
And Dietzel, he stayed, and of course he went 11-0. And LSU reeled off a season and a half of victory after victory before losing a controversial game at Tennessee. But no time in LSU history, I'm told, obviously I was an infant, but it rivals what happened 1958, 1959, that the town had gone crazy over LSU and Billy Cannon and Paul Dietzel. Mm-hmm. And he was a guy, when he walked in a room, you knew it. He in his younger years, and when I'm talking younger years, he's 89 when he died today, when he was still in his mid-50s, he was just a spectacularly handsome man.
I saw him in the spring at an event, and I thought he certainly had a presence about him, and he was very charismatic, and obviously it had a lot to do with his recruiting and his decisions when he was coaching.
And he left LSU to go to West Point, which it was a bizarre decision, and he regretted it. And he came back, and he came back again, and he died in Baton Rouge. You know, of the coaches that LSU has let go, most of them don't live here. Curly Hallman, Mike Archer, Bill Arnsparger, Jerry DiNardo, they live in other parts of the country. But Dietzel and Jerry Stovall are the two who came back. You see Stovall, who is his last great player on an almost daily basis.
I do.
So any parting shots for Wait, Don't Tell Me and Thursday night? Renee?
Rally up our troops, Baton Rouge. Come out with all your enthusiasm. Make signs if you want, welcoming Peter, Carl, and the crew. We want to see you out there, energy just bursting.
Well, thank you, Renee Arang and Paul Arrigo, the A-team from Visit Baton Rouge.
I like that.
We'll be back. I knew you did. with Noel Hammett after this timeout. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, 877-217-5757. Inkster Show at WRKF.org. And we're joined in studio by Noel Hammett. For 16 years, he was on the East Baton Rouge Parish School Board. And he is still quite an activist when it comes to education in Louisiana, and a follower, and attends meetings with regularity, some meetings where he's welcome and others where they probably wonder, what the heck is he doing in the room? Good morning, Noel Hammett.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on, Jim.
Now, I see you've got all kinds of paperwork with you. And Noel had indicated to me he was going to make a significant announcement today. What's going on?
Well, I'm going to hold off on the announcement, Jim, and kind of tell you a little bit about why I feel the need to make this announcement. But you said we could talk a little bit about the state of education, so I thought I'd bring in a little information.
All right, well, I assume the state of education has something to do with your announcement.
It sure does, John.
John, well, I've been called worse.
Yeah, there's another John we'll talk about today.
Are you thinking of John White?
I was, in fact, thinking of John White. And as you know, I've been involved in education for many, many years in this state at a lot of levels. And there comes a time in a relationship when you have to step back and say, you know, how much can we take? And I think that time has come when it's time for the teachers and the citizens of Louisiana to write their Dear John letters. And I think that it's time for John White to consider taking a step to move away from Louisiana so that we can begin to repair some of the damage that he's brought to this state.
All right. Is that the announcement you're talking about?
That's not the political announcement.
All right. Well, what do you have against John White?
I basically like truth. And I like people who tell the truth, and I like an open government, one that's transparent. And what we have seen during this administration of John White is one lie after another.
Okay, well, before you keep going, I'll say this. We will invite John White to be on the show. He's the superintendent of education, for those who are wondering which John White Noel might be referencing. And I didn't know Noel was going to be as strident as he is in his remarks. He's obviously not a supporter of John White, but sounds like he's calling for his resignation. And I think that's always appropriate to have the, quote, other side, and we will endeavor to do that.
But sure.
But what's your reason for calling for the man's resignation?
Well, I think even most recently, we've all heard about the there's now an ad on TV by Jindal talking about the federal government, Department of Justice coming in, and you would think they're blocking the doors to the private and parochial schools where the voucher kids are going. John White was on LPB talking about this, claiming that these are poor kids, and they're not all poor. In fact, it goes up to 250% of the poverty line. But more importantly is this incredible hypocrisy. It seems that the media hasn't caught on yet, although some individuals have. Bob Mann talked about it in his blog. But John White went into federal court in the St. Helena case to block parents from attending public school in St. Helena so that they would have to remain in his recovery school district middle school. He went to court, and in his brief, the attorneys actually said that this court should consider St. Helena's request, looking at it from the desegregation mindset, went on to say if St. Helena is allowed to add additional grades to its elementary school and high school, because there's only one middle school there and it's run by the state of Louisiana, by John White's office, if St. Helena was allowed to add additional grades, that could possibly create a greater desegregation issue rather than helping to remedy the one at hand. So he went into court to block parental choice in St. Helena, one of the poorest districts in the state of Louisiana, and has succeeded. Those parents in the middle school have no choice. They have to go with John White's recovery school district. Now, in Baton Rouge and other places, we know that they've opted out of his schools and gone back to the school districts, such as here in EBR, where the recovery school district schools have about 1/4 of the students.
Well, is there anything nefarious about that?
There absolutely is, because at the one and the same time, he's claiming that the Department of Justice is trying to block vouchers. But the fact is, the memorandum from Department of Justice specifically says on the very first full page, at this time, the United States is not asking that this court enjoin the state from awarding any school vouchers. They do say they ask that no further vouchers be awarded unless and until Louisiana obtains authorization from the federal courts. Now, the law authorizing the vouchers specifically says that we have to follow all desegregation laws. Those laws require that we analyze voucher awards to determine their effects on desegregation, that we provide information to the courts. John White did not do that. In fact, they specifically point out that 1,300 students receiving vouchers, the data on them did not go to the Department of Justice in spite of numerous requests for that information to be provided.
Okay, well, no, you're wound up here, and let's try to make your responses brief. And I do want to note that John McGinnis, a man who's well-respected as a political observer, writes, Governor Jindal may call the lawsuit brought by President Barack Obama's administration against the state's voucher program cynical, immoral, hypocritical, and more, but he's got to love the big guy for it, writes McGinnis. Had the U.S. Justice Department not intervened, Jindal's already embattled scholarship program may have shriveled and faded in years to come under pressure from the legislature and legal challenges from school boards and teacher unions. Instead, U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder snatched it from oblivion with the high-profile lawsuit that the governor is turning into a higher-profile political issue. The governor is spending some big money, about $500,000, on television to make his case to the people of Louisiana. And you said that the federal government is against vouchers.
Blocking. Well, they're not blocking any vouchers. In fact, they're simply requiring John White to do what every district superintendent has always had to do, and that is to provide the data about how their movement of students is going to impact desegregation. John White knew that, and for whatever reason, did not provide the data to the Department of Justice. But one of the problems
Could this be an attempt by the federal administration, the president, and the Justice Department to stop vouchers?
I don't believe it is.
You don't think that's the ultimate intent?
If that were the intent, they would have stopped this year's vouchers. They would have said, we're not waiting any longer. They could have asked for an injunction immediately. They specifically said, we're not asking that the court enjoin the state from awarding any school vouchers. They have to follow the law.
Okay, 297-5633 is your number, 877-217-5757. Former East Baton Rouge Parish School Board member Noel Hammett, who was a lightning rod of sorts when he was on the school board, and he won four times and then lost the last time. And you had forces that are supportive of John White who were against you. Is this sour grapes? Is this what this is about, Noel?
It's not that at all, because I've been consistent all the way through. We have to be open and honest about what we're doing. And, you know, I'm looking at a school system across the state that has teacher retirements up over 30% last year, and this year it's looking to be maybe 40, 45%. And when that information came out in the paper and across the media sources in the state, John White came back with a report that said, well, there's no problem with attrition, that we have enough teachers, hiring more Teach for America teachers, for example. But experienced educators across the state are leaving in droves, and superintendents, personnel directors, all are saying, principals, it's because of the policies of John White. There's a real attack on teachers and public education. He leads that attack, and then he responds by saying that those leaving are some of the least effective. When his report didn't even talk about retirees.
Didn't he receive high marks when he was heading the recovery school district?
He didn't even spend, a year down there? He was brought in to take over for Pastor Eck. Everybody's aware of that. And the recovery school district is one of the areas where we don't have any transparency. In fact, they created something called T-districts for transition districts. What they're really doing is hiding the scores of the lowest performing students. John White.
How are they doing that?
Well, one of the ways is if you have a school that you have selective charters in New Orleans, the rest of the kids are, they, you know, look for different charter schools to attend. When they get kicked out or if they can't get into a school of their choice, they end up in John White's directly run RSD schools. Those are the lowest performing schools in the state of Louisiana by far. What we don't hear about is when one of those schools, the scores are so bad, they don't produce the data for that school for 3 years. They churn those schools. They turn it over to a new operator. So we don't see those scores. And in fact, all of the data that used to be available on the state website in the Department of Education is gone. Overnight, John White destroyed the old website, took all the historical data off. When asked why, he told the people of Louisiana, I had too many complaints about it. When Tom Aswell said, could we see the emails or letters from complaints? They sent some emails, and they were complaints about the new website, so they clarified it. When he again got a response, it said, we have nothing to give you. In other words, we had no complaints. It was a lie.
Okay. John McGinnis, continuing in his latest missive from Law Politics, writes, state courts already had limited the future of vouchers in Louisiana with rulings that barred the use of public education dollars through the Minimum Foundation Program. Unable to get into the MFP piggy bank, Jindal had to scrape together $40 million in his budget to fund private school vouchers for 8,000 students, or about 1% of 700,000 public school students. Given those pressures, writes McGinnis, prospects for the future growth of the program were limited, as was its political value to Jindal, until the Fed's legal threat arose. 297-5633, Phil in Jefferson Terrace. You're on the air with Noel Hammett. Hi, Phil.
Good morning, Jim. I just want to join the rest of the state and the reality-based planet and hang in our head in shame once again in Louisiana. We've got another court case that this is going to be dragged through. It's patently unconstitutional. So we just have to give props to the right wing for living in their bubble, those fundamentalist boys. Anyway.
No.
I'm sorry.
All right, well.
Well, I don't know what to say. The fact is, the real question for some is whether this was an intentional act from the Department of Education to not respond to requests from the Department of Justice. They had to know that this was going to end up in court. And as McGinnis says, this is probably the best thing that could have happened to Jindal. He was getting no traction across the country, and now he's been speaking, and other Republican leaders have spoken out. Again, without the information, perhaps never reading the briefs, and certainly not knowing about what John White and Jindal did in St. Helena Parish.
Well, in a speech last week to the National Press Club, John McGinnis notes it's only a few blocks from the Justice Department headquarters. The governor accused the president of trapping poor students and failing schools in order to curry favor with national teacher unions. Think the governor's on to something?
I think the governor is reaching for a base that's disappearing and dropping him at every step of the way. We see that across the polls in Louisiana, but certainly nationally, I think his national ambitions are going to be sinking rather drastically, especially when the truth comes out about
okay,
this.
Okay, well, do you speak as a former supporter of the governor or one who has never supported the governor? Have you ever voted for the man?
I did not vote for Governor Bobby Jindal.
So you've had three opportunities.
I did. And
four opportunities, actually. 2003, 2007, 2011, right? Yeah, he ran for governor three times.
Oh, I mean,
he ran against Kathleen Blanco.
That's right. Three, not four.
Well, four, because there was a primary and a general election with Blanco.
Okay.
So you've had four chances.
No, I did not.
You're 0 for 4.
I have always said you very carefully, when you're looking at someone to vote for, who were the supporters? And the supporters of Bobby Jindal were people that I did not, in fact, believe were legitimate leaders. And so I did not support him.
So you've had four opportunities. You didn't support him. Some would say, well, you were biased from the start.
Well, I would certainly say that anyone in the state of Louisiana who doesn't carefully evaluate their choices is perhaps not doing their duty as a citizen of the state. But each of us is able to cast our votes, and I had those opportunities. I have not been a supporter of Bobby Jindal. I have, in fact, been a lifelong Republican.
Well, yeah, that's curious because you and the governor are in the same party, and I would think by virtue of the fact that he was a Republican running against a Democrat in 2003 and a Republican running against two Democrats and an independent in 2007 and a Republican running against a kind of a double-A tier of candidates in 2011, that you might have supported him once or twice, being the first, considering the fact that you're both stalwarts in the GOP.
Well, I don't know about the stalwarts. Others have questioned the fact that I'm a little too independent for some.
Well, you do share something with him. You both were elected four times as Republicans.
This
so,
is true.
So, and now I'm eyeballing some of the paperwork. Actually, I'm having to read upside down here, and Noel is filling out something as we speak. What it looks to me like you may have been to the nearby
Registrar
of Voters office. What's going on,
yeah,
Noel?
With all of the lack of transparency and with what I think are clear lies, I can no longer support my position as being a member of the Republican Party. And so I am today signing, before you, Jim, I'm signing my change of party.
And he is signing it. Now, is this a change to what?
This is a change to the Democratic Party of Louisiana. I am now a Democrat and will continue to vote my conscience and carefully evaluate all of the candidates and positions. But I can't go along with Republican leaders and Jindal and John White who have lied to the people of Louisiana, and now they're lying to the country and even putting out ads lying about what the Department of Justice is doing in the state of Louisiana in light of what they have done in St. Helena.
Stories today indicate there's a schism in the Republican ranks at the highest levels in Washington, with Mitch McConnell and Ted Cruz being on opposite parts of the spectrum right now within the Republican ranks. Why didn't you fight instead of?
Well, I haven't. I have
out of
in
the
fact.
Party.
That's a good question, Jim. I have in fact fought over the years. I've fought to get people to understand what was happening in public education. You know, all these claims about failing schools mm-hmm. are bogus. There's nothing in our accountability system that measures the quality of teaching in a school. It simply measures the poverty in those schools. I've demonstrated that to people in the party, but no one wants to really go there. They've taken an ideological position that public schools are bad, that mm-hmm. public schools have failed. That's actually incorrect. It's wrong, but it has gotten them a lot of political traction. I think that I'm going to do everything I can to stop that traction and to remove the leadership in education in the state of Louisiana.
Well, Noel Hammett, who won four elections as a Republican, has now officially, I guess officially, become a Democrat. You've got to turn that back in. Yeah,
that's correct.
Well, when did you register as a Republican? When you were 18?
Back when I was a soldier in the Army. I don't remember what year it was. I went in the Army at 17, so couldn't register then.
Well, but the year after, but you could have. So
been a lifelong
and,
Republican.
And Noel, I think, is 56 years old.
55. Don't push it anymore.
Well, almost 56. So we're talking 37 years.
Yeah, we're talking a long time.
Okay,
Jim.
We'll talk a bit more with Noel Hammett and get to Common Core as well. But Noel is now a Democrat. 297-5633, back in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number, and Noel Hammett will be with us for a few more minutes. He has announced, as in a few moments ago, that he has switched parties, going from Republican to Democratic. Now, in the last generation, there have been a number of Republicans who became Democrats, and Noel is, the other way around, Democrats who became Republicans. Noel is going in the other direction. As the state becomes more red, Noel is going blue. I guess that's why he wore blue to the show today. And we've got a few folks who want to talk to him about this and his aversion to the governor's stance on education. Now, you've been a thorn in the side of the governor going back to Paul Pastorek before John White. Some would say, what took you so long, Noel Hammett?
Well, it's not as though I haven't been fighting all along. It's very hard to gain traction when many of the major media outlets have taken strong positions on reform. I remember asking in a meeting with the editorial board at The Advocate, I asked them, why don't you point out some of these obvious lies? And the answer was, we have officially taken an editorial stance in favor of reform. And for that reason, they weren't going to go after Pastor Rec or John White. I was regularly sending information to them showing that some of the things coming out were just false. And they didn't pick up on them, just as they haven't picked up on the contradiction. They reported on St. Helena, and they reported on the DOJ, but never put the two together in what is just an obvious hypocrisy.
Leah, downtown. Good morning, Leah. You're on with Noel Hammett.
Hi, Noel.
Hi, Leah.
You know, I commend you for, you know, standing up for what you believe in, the education issue, and even changing your party over that. I'm curious what you think about the Louisiana Science Education Act, and specifically how it pertains to vouchers, and if you think that would ever have a chance of being repealed.
I think the act is unconstitutional on its face. I think it was a backdoor attempt to remove science and allow religion and ideology to play a major role in education in the state. It wasn't the first time they tried it. I remember the old Edwards v. Aguillard case. So I think, yes, this is just one more attempt to move away from science and towards this kind of pure ideology. I think you're right.
Thank you, Leah. 297-5633. A few more minutes with Mr. Hammett. John on Florida. Hi, John. You're on the air with Noel.
Hi there, Noel.
Hi, John.
It's John. congratulations.
Well, thank you.
I'm eager to hear what your next plans are. What you going to do about all this for us?
You going to run for office?
Well, I tweeted out
again.
I tweeted out before the show. After I heard the teaser that Jim put on about an important announcement, it's important for me, I think, alone. But I said, should I run for school board or not, or governor? But the fact is, I don't have any immediate plans to run for anything. I do have plans to work towards the betterment of education in Louisiana and removing the leadership that has lied to the people of Louisiana about our public education system.
Well, I recall Ronald Reagan, who remembers supported Hubert Humphrey when he ran for the Senate in Minnesota, who supported Harry Truman against Tom Dewey, railed against Republicans in his day. He was an FDR New Deal Democrat. And then when he ran for governor of California, he became a Republican, saying the Democratic Party left me. I didn't leave them. Is that what you're saying about the Republican Party?
In my case, the Republican Party has left the ethics, the transparency, the good government, and what we're seeing now is denial of public records requests, the failure to abide by open meetings law, and we're seeing more and more an attempt to stymie the rights of the people to access to their government. We have a governor's office that is rated last in the country in transparency.
Nancy in St. Gabriel. Hi, Nancy. You're on the air with Noel Hammett.
Good morning. Good morning. I just wanted to follow up on some of the issues that have been touched on regarding, in particular, the news media supporting reform and the number one goal of education reform being to increase academic outcomes for students. And I know Noel is generally up on academic outcomes regarding vouchers and the Recovery School District and charter schools and historically around the country what they've looked like and what they've looked like in Louisiana so far. So I was hoping he would address those issues.
All right.
Sure. We have certainly a history of evaluations of voucher programs across the country that have not come out in favor of vouchers. Certainly the voucher proponents and charter proponents will point to their studies. What we often see are what happened here in Louisiana, where it's not an apples-to-apples comparison, it's literally an apples-to-zebra. In New Orleans, the Credo study that John White touted about a month ago said Louisiana's charter schools are doing some of the best work in the country. They're outperforming public schools. Well, who did they compare them to? The majority of charter schools in Louisiana are in New Orleans. They compared them to what they call their feeder schools. The feeder schools are direct-run recovery school district schools run by Patrick Dobard and John White, the lowest performing schools in the state of Louisiana. So you took selective charters, many of which actually test their students to get in, and compared those students to students in schools that are T schools and really horrible schools run by the state.
Ray in Napoleonville. Hi, Ray. You're on with Noel.
Yes, good morning. I was just listening to you broadcast, and my question to Noel, and maybe he can elaborate, is that the basic problem with Louisiana public education, it goes back to the Bessie Board, and I believe, if I'm correct, correct me if I'm wrong, but doesn't the governor appoint the majority of the members to the Bessie Board and the rest are elected? If that's so, then why can't all the Bessie Board members be elected?
Actually, it's the reverse. The governor appoints three people. I have said publicly and very critically that we have the absolute best Bessie that money can buy. We had money
now
coming
you have
in.
Run for the Bessie Board, haven't you?
I ran once for the Bessie Board. I got around 50,000 votes for, I think I spent about 7,000. My opponent spent about 125,000, mm-hmm. and she got about 70,000. I came in third. There were two of us got around 50,000. So I came in dead last is another way of putting it. On the other hand, in this latest round of elections, we had outside money pouring into the state from groups who make money off of the reforms.
All right. Well, you lost your last school board endeavor. How much did you spend in that race?
I think I spent around $7,000, Jim.
And how much did Barbara Reich Freiberg spend to beat
you? I think
you?
Barbara may have spent around $80,000, but there was lots of other money from Lobby and Lane Grigsby, about $250,000
well,
dollars
and the,
spent in that
Chamber
race.
Of Baton Rouge.
And the Chamber of Baton Rouge directed lots of mailings out attacking me.
All right, so you're a Democrat. Getting back to the earlier question, what are you going to do with this? Does this just mean you're a Democrat, or does it mean you're going to become more or less of an activist?
I'm certainly not going to become less of an activist. I'm going to work with the Democratic Party to try to get a balance, to try to fight for transparency, to fight for the teachers, the students, the citizens of Louisiana who have been hoodwinked over lots of issues in education. We're going to expose the lies of John White and others. And I think we're going to fight for a change in the leadership of this state and certainly in the area of education, mm-hmm. which has always been my passion.
Well, one man's lie is another man's interpretation, but you're saying there are a lot of white lies.
Yeah, there are lots of white lies, and they're not little
That's
lies.
What
Noel said. They're just by
well,
John White.
Okay, well, let's try to get the superintendent to respond, because I think what you've said about him today warrants a response, and John White is a man who I don't think is going away, even though you want him to.
I think he is, John.
You do?
I do.
You don't think he'll last through the end of this administration?
The history of reformers is that they move on fairly quickly. They do their damage.
Well, if he gets another job, but I don't think he's going to be forced out.
Well, we always can ask the question, why does someone leave their position? Sometimes it's because they were forced, and sometimes it was because they chose. But I think he knows that his credibility here is waning.
Well, his credibility with you is waning, but with the governor, it appears that...
they have a difference of opinion here, apparently.
Well, on this, as we switch gears, and Noel, you can stay if you have an inquiry for our next guest. The story today from Will Sentell, top of the Advocate, wading into a national debate. Governor Jindal says he's concerned Louisiana public school classrooms would be saddled with a federalized curriculum, sparked by a series of tougher standards called Common Core. And with us to talk about Common Core is Michael Brickman from the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, which is a conservative education policy think tank. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, Michael. What's your take on Common Core?
Well, these were state-developed standards, and so they are neither a curriculum nor are they federalized. They were developed by states. They're a set of goals and expectations for students in English and mathematics, and a little more than that. I know there's been a lot of concern from people on both the left and the right, but I think the more people are looking at the Common Core, the more they're developing an understanding of what these standards actually are and why they'll be good for students.
Okay, well, you're in favor of Common Core. You believe that it does good things for accountability, fiscal responsibility. Why is that the case?
Well, we took a look at every state's standards at the Fordham Institute, and with Louisiana, unfortunately, standards were set very low. We graded Louisiana's standards in English a D and in math a C. The Common Core were rated a B-plus and A-minus, respectively. So for Louisiana, like most other states, this is a major upgrade for schools. And not only are they setting higher expectations, but they're clear, they're more specific, and oftentimes there are fewer actual standards listed, so teachers can focus on what really matters.
Well, our previous guest, Noel Hammett, is correct. The governor obviously is against this, but his superintendent of education is on the record as being for it. Do most conservatives favor Common Core?
According to polling, yes. I think you look at polls across the country, and it's true that I think people don't have a deep understanding yet of what the Common Core is, and that's why I think we're hearing some of these misconceptions about what these standards actually are. But when people actually look into this and actually do understand what the standards are, people across the board, including conservatives, including in some polls that I've seen, even Tea Partiers, are majority in favor of the Common Core.
Well, the governor says we support rigor and higher academic standards that help ensure Louisiana students are getting the best possible education. What we do not support is a national or federalized curriculum. Your response?
Yeah, as I said at the outset, I mean, these are standards, and it's important to understand that there's a difference between standards and curriculum. Standards are really a set of goals and expectations for students, basically the overarching concepts that we want students to understand when they graduate from high school. Curriculum is much more specific. It deals with what's actually being taught in the classroom, and that's always has been and always will be the purview of local school boards, teachers, and hopefully with oversight of parents.
Well, Cameron Henry, who is a Republican lawmaker from New Orleans, says he's going to file a bill in the upcoming session early next year to remove standards and testing requirements from public school classrooms, and he urges the governor to take action right now to address this issue. It appears that there is a schism in the ranks among Republicans in Louisiana, Michael.
You know, it'll be interesting to see what this bill actually does. The other states have taken a closer look at the standards, which I don't think there's anything wrong with having a strong debate about what these standards mean for each individual state that has voluntarily adopted them. So debate is a good thing because, like I said, the more people see of the standards, the more they like them. But I think it's also important to look at what, you know, some of the alternatives are. Louisiana, as I also said, had very low standards before the Common Core. And so I don't think anyone, no matter their view and no matter what some of their potential concerns of these current standards might be, no one wants to go back to a set of lower standards and expectations for kids. So states do have some flexibility to tweak the standards to make them a little bit more specific to individual state and add some things that are maybe left out from the old standards, but on the whole, Louisiana standards that they've adopted now, the Common Core, are significantly better than the standards they had before.
They've been adopted in 45 states, but nonetheless, there will be a rally against Common Core at the Department of Education headquarters at 10 o'clock this Saturday. Our previous guest is still with us, knows a lot about education, having been a school board member for 16 years. I don't know what Noel's position is. What do you think of Common Core?
Well, I actually think that we as a country are much stronger with a diverse set of standards across different states. One of the few things that you gain is some kind of notoriety in comparing states, and that's not a particularly useful thing since what you're normally comparing is the rates of poverty in those states.
All right.
But one thing that's absolutely true is as more and more governors and states become more aware of what's in the Common Core, we have states pulling out. We don't hear about that much from the proponents, but we have states and Republican leaders and Democratic leaders pulling out.
All right. I want Michael Brickman to respond.
I just have to kind of correct a couple of those facts. First of all, no states have pulled out of the Common Core standards. There have been a couple of states that have re-examined the assessments that they're using or switch to different assessments, but states have not dropped the standards themselves. And I think it's helpful also to understand, again, I'm not sure if maybe your other guest is maybe misunderstanding what standards are. Standards, we're not talking about outcomes. We're not talking about curriculum. We're talking about, and I agree that when it comes to curriculum, we should have a diversity of different methods to get to the ultimate goal, which is proficiency on basic English and mathematics skills.
Thank you, Michael Brickman. Thank you, Noel Hammett. And Noel made news on the show today. He is now a Democrat, or will be in a few minutes. He's filled out the paperwork, says he's going to follow through, Democrat Noel Hammett. And we'll be back tomorrow. For Kevin Gallagher, I'm Jim Engster. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.